Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We are beyond excited to welcome the amazing Serena Ryder to the show. Serena has had a crazy year with the success of her album Harmony and her hit song Stompa. Serena talks about what's going on in her life and career and why world domination is on her mind. We're then joined by Dr. Ed LaMadrid talking about the many benefits of acupuncture and how it can change your life. Author Janice Bastani talks about making solid decisions in your life, and Gina Lee drops in with the Love Zone.
Capture your need for sound.
It's a great thrill to welcome to the show an amazing Canadian talent whose career is skyrocketing with her fantastic album Harmony, which features awesome songs like Stompa and What I Wouldn't Do. Serena Ryder, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Yay, Kelly Alexander Show. So excited.
I'm very happy to have you here. And here's the thing. Now, you've been a musician since you were, you know, fairly young. Did you always know that a career in music was your path in life?
Yeah, I did, actually. Regardless of, you know, the amount of success that I would have or not, I was hooked on music from a very, very young age. And I knew that that's where my heart was, that's where my passion was, and I would be doing it for the rest of my life.
Now, from what I understand, you play a bunch of different instruments. Which one calls to you the most?
My favorite, which I'm okay at, not really great at, but my very, very favorite is the drums.
Nice.
I love it. I feel like it's so much fun. It's so primal. I feel like a little kid when I'm playing them. Very exciting.
Is it true you play the clarinet?
I did play the clarinet. I played it in high school. I rented one a couple months ago. And I actually can still play it.
That's
pretty badly.
If we speak about your album Harmony, to me it's something, and obviously to all of your fans, it's something very special. Did you know at the time of recording it, that you were onto something? Like, did you feel magic in the studio going on?
I did, yeah. There was definitely something that was magic in the air when we were writing the songs and when we were in the studio. And it was just so much fun to write and to record. And you could feel it in the air. You didn't know what it was, but you could feel that there was something different about this record from my other records. And there were a lot of different factors that came into harmony.
Nice.
To be able to record this record. But, you know, I think a huge part of it was recording it, you know, at my home in Toronto and in my own studio in my backyard.
Did you record also in Los Angeles? And what is the difference between recording in Toronto, like hometown, as, you know, as opposed to being in LA?
Very different, you know, but we started, the very first song we recorded was Stompa, because it was the first song we wrote for the record, and that was recorded in L.A., and then we came back to Toronto and did the rest of the record in Toronto, and then we did some of the bonus tracks in L.A. as well. So we did two more. We did three altogether out of 15 tracks in L.A., and yeah, it's totally different. I feel like the environment that you're in is always affects the music that you play. But at the same time, you know, it was all very laid back and all very mellow. It wasn't like a big empty studio setting at all for this record. It was really, really chill. And it was always just me and one, you know, producer, Jared Batiste, or it was just me and John Levine. So it was really, really kind of a tight knit, very chill, relaxed setting for the entire record.
Why do you think, for example, that Stompa has touched so many people? Because it has been everywhere. Like, I actually saw it on like a promo ad on BET for like a show called The Game. I was like, look at my girl, she's on BET.
I know, it's so awesome. Well, I know that Stompa is one of those songs that is crossing a lot of, you know, borders musically, genres, and all of those things, because it's, you know, it's a song that has such a positive message, which is really simply and also yet the profoundness of music and how powerful music is, and how, you know, we all have our demons, and we all have our lives that can get complicated and complex, but when we have music and when we move around and when we dance and when we use our body and get out of our head, you know, it can be the best medicine in the world. And that's the message of Zampa.
Now, I'm sure this year has been incredibly busy for you with the release of Harmony as well as the success of it. Have you had a chance to enjoy the ride, or is everything a blur right now?
Oh, it's been great. It's been really good, you know, and this is something that I've been doing for a while. So I feel like every once in a while, I definitely have to remind myself to just kind of pinch myself and be like, okay, you know, look around, dude. This is pretty awesome. And I do that often. I do stop and I do look around. But, you know, everything, like everything in your life, you know, when you're in the middle of it, it's a bit more difficult to be present. But that's, you know, that's a life goal, to be more present.
Where is your quiet place? Like, where do you get the creative juices flowing? And does it happen because, you know, you're out on the road, you're out doing this, or do you need to really be apart from all of that for a bit to get things happening again?
I find it inside myself. You know, I find it in a lot of different places. But for me, sometimes I will find it outside of myself in the woods or at a cottage, or if I can get by water, be by trees. I find nature really helps me out a lot. Helps mm-hmm. kind of center me and fill me up and inspire me.
I also
find it hanging out with kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, kids are pretty amazing creatures, you know, and the fact that we all were kids at one point, you know, it's kind of strange to me how we can forget how to be just in the moment.
When I watch you perform, it almost feels like you have like a childhood wonderment to you. Do you like purposely try to keep that with you when you're out doing what you need to be doing?
I try and stay true to how I feel on stage as much as possible and kind of, you know, be there. And I feel like music always helps me kind of stay in the moment. It is. And then I definitely do feel like, you know, a kid when I'm on stage sometimes, because like, wow, like I'm doing what I've always wanted to do, you know, with my life. And when your dreams come true, it's pretty a magical feeling.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Serena Ryder. Make sure you check her out on her website, serenaryder.com. Who would you consider musical influences? And is there an artist out there right now that you would give your right hand to collaborate with?
Okay, well, I have so many musical influences, but I'll give you like a few of the musical influences that were huge on me. Bette Midler was huge growing up. Beaches, that movie, I loved it so much. I love TLC and Janet Jackson.
Nice.
It's massive. The Beatles and Ella Fitzgerald and Etta James.
And artist-wise,
for someone, someone to collaborate with, I would love to do a duet with Bruno Mars. I think that would be crazy.
That would be crazy. Let's make that happen, Serena. Let's get on that.
All right. That sounds like a plan.
Now, I just want to ask you about being on tour. Obviously, like, you've got a crazy schedule being on tour. What's your favorite part about being on the road? And also, what does it feel like when you are, you know, performing and you actually see people singing your songs back at you?
Well, you just answered both questions. What's my favorite part of being on tour is when I'm performing on stage and people are singing the words to my songs with me. It's definitely one of the most amazing, magical parts of being a musician, is to know that people have listened to your songs enough to know the words to your songs and sing them back with you. It's amazing. And it's such a celebration. I also love, you know, goofing around with my band, because they're my best friends, and I love hanging out with them and doing crazy, goofy stuff, taking weird Vine videos and tweeting funny pictures. And I like being like a little kid on tour with my band. So that's also a really fun part.
Now, you just mentioned social media. Are you addicted to your social media, your Twitter? Like, I know you follow a lot of people back. You followed me back, which made my day.
I follow everybody back, but they don't allow you to follow more than a certain amount of people a day.
Okay.
So then I get people tweeting me like, you said you'd follow me and you didn't. But I'm like, no, I'm going to follow you, but they stop me from following people at a certain amount. So anyways, I will follow anyone that follows me.
That is fun. And are you addicted to Twitter? Like, do you like really enjoy that personal connection with your fans?
I do. I love it. And I love the interaction, and I love, you know, that I can talk to thousands and thousands of people with one little, you know, tweet. I think it's so cool. I love it.
Great. Now, before I let you bounce, what can we expect from Serena Ryder in the next 8 to 12 months?
Oh, my God. World domination. Watch out.
Lady Gaga, look out.
I'm going to have to learn some dance moves.
That's all right. You got some good ones already. Serena Ryder, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Serena Ryder. Again, for more information, check out her website, SerenaRyder.com.
Hey there, this is Serena Ryder, and you're hanging out with Kelly on The Kelly Alexander Show.
People working every night and day. Never give yourself no time. Got too many bills to pay. Slow down. Nothing's gonna disappear. If you give yourself some room. To move to the music you hear. Gotta get up. Listen to me. Clap your hands. Stomp your feet. People looking for the great escape. Looking to the greener side. Trying to find a better way.
And pains, but many of us suffer through them on a day-to-day basis. One type of alternative medicine which seems to be helping many people overcome their chronic aches and pains is acupuncture. Joining me today is the founder of the Integrative Health Studio in New York City and Chicago, and is also a pioneering doctor of acupuncture, Dr. Ed LaMadrid. Dr. Ed, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So, Dr. Ed, can we start off just sort of generally talking about acupuncture? Can you explain how it works? Because I think a lot of people just picture needles and then they freak out.
Well, so, and that's kind of a common occurrence. But the interesting thing is that once they get acupuncture, once they try it out for the first time, they're usually converted. Because, you know, a couple of myths that I debunk with a lot of people is, number one, people think that it's painful. And it actually isn't. Depending on where the needles are placed, you know, many people will report feeling nothing at all or maybe a slight pinch. The thing about the needles that we use, they are stainless steel and a lot thinner than the hypodermic needles that, you know, we get when we go for our flu shot. And everyone knows what kind of sting that is and how sore your shoulder is after you get your flu shot. This doesn't have the same reaction.
Can you explain how the needles don't hurt? Because I'm fortunate that I've had acupuncture. I've been doing it, I guess, for the last probably year and a half now, 2 years. And it just, like, you really don't feel anything except for maybe, like, a little prick depending on what part of the body that they need to sort of access.
Yep. Well, so the easy answer to that is that the needles are much thinner. The other thing, remember, for acupuncture needles is that they're a lot smoother. And so they're really designed to go into the skin without kind of ripping the skin open. Like a hypodermic needle is really designed to do that. It's designed to basically make a tunnel so that medication can kind of flow through.
Mm-hmm.
Acupuncture needles are solid. And so basically the skin just kind of parts. And that's why the sensation is very different. And for most people, it's not painful at all.
Can you explain what the needles are actually doing? Because I think, again, a lot of people are like, well, why are you sticking needles in me and how is that going to help?
So you have to look at it this way. So we have an energy system in the body. And at certain points in the body, the energy comes very close to the surface of the skin. These are the acupuncture points that we use. Basically, these are like traffic signals in the body. And so they kind of regulate the flow of energy throughout the body. And if we use the analogy of a car, you know, you've got your electrical system in the car, and you know that if the wiring is off a little bit, you know that that maintenance light is going to go off on your dashboard, it's not going to click off, and, you know, it tells you that you need to kind of look at something. So what the acupuncture needle does is it accesses the energy of the body at specific points, and depending on what's going on with that person, the needle will actually do the change. So in other words, so there are three things that we look at. People could come in with not enough energy, you know, and we've all felt that, you know, we're exhausted, we're tired. Another thing could be people having too much energy. We've seen some of those people too. They're a little bit bouncing off the walls and they're not even on coffee. And then we've got kind of a more common pattern, which is stagnation. So we have enough energy, but it's stuck at certain points in the body. And that's basically a traffic jam. Think about when you're in a traffic jam, what happens? If you're on a time schedule, you start getting a little upset. Maybe you start getting a little overheated. And so that happens in the body, and that happens to our emotions when we become stagnated. So the needle can actually bring in some more energy or sedate or slow down energy that's too fast or too excessive. And in the cases where it's stagnated and stuck, actually releases it.
That's amazing. And when you get a treatment, how long does it take to sort of start activating? Does it activate right away? Does it take 24 hours? Like, how does that work?
Well, the interesting thing is that it does activate right away. Now, the way people will feel it might be a little bit different. So I've had patients with different pain syndromes, and they walk out after one session pain-free. For other patients, depending on how long they've had the symptoms, you know, they may come in and say, "Doc, my pain is at a level 10. But after the treatment, it's down to a 2 or a 3, which is pretty profound when you think about it,
mm-hmm.
in one session. And then again, you have to consider how old the patient is, how long they've had the condition. So for some people, they get immediate results. For other people, it needs to kind of build over a period of time.
Can you talk about what types of pain that you can help alleviate and you know, what types of problems and stuff that you can help?
Sure, sure. Well, one of the main things that acupuncture has been thoroughly researched is just all kinds of musculoskeletal pain. So it could be the pain from a stomach ache, could be the pain from a headache. And headaches, acupuncture is great for all kinds, you know, starting out with like tension headaches, food headaches, I forgot to drink coffee headache, or even migraine headaches. And then we start getting into other areas of pain like osteoarthritis. There were actually a couple of great studies that came out that showed acupuncture was more effective in treating knee pain and shoulder pain than some of the other treatments that are widely available. Back pain is a primary thing that people will go to for acupuncture. And then also emotional pain, which is a lot of people are not aware of, but acupuncture has been very effective in treating depression, anxiety, you know, all those kind of really emotionally painful situations.
Is it true that there are lots of organs in your body that carry emotion and that acupuncture can help deal with?
That's an interesting question. And so according to traditional Chinese medicine, the answer is yes. So we deal with a theory called the five-element theory in Chinese medicine. And what that is that there are five major emotions, that we all deal with. There are five major tastes. They're all different things. And when we get back to the emotions, the thing about the emotions is that we as people need to experience all the emotions equally. That's a very balanced lifestyle. That's a very balanced approach. So things like joy, of course, we would think, of course, who wouldn't want more joy? But then also one of the emotions is also anger. And a lot of people might think, oh, well, anger is bad. And actually, traditional Chinese medicine says that's not true. There's always a place for anger, and it's the appropriate release or expression of anger. So when people kind of hold on to anger and they don't get to express it, that's when it becomes pathological. That's when it can cause problems later on. But, you know, if you're upset about something, there's a way to kind of express it in a better way, in a healthier way. And the other emotions would be worry, grief, and fear. And so organs in the body are home to those emotions, according to Chinese medicine. So if I have someone who's coming in and they're very fearful, the kidneys are actually the organs in Chinese medicine that hold the energy of fear. And so I might treat the kidneys or treat the kidney channel in order to deal with that fearful situation that the patient's dealing with.
That's amazing. I think it's just so wonderful. And you know, I will freely admit, before I started acupuncture, I actually went to acupuncture as a last resort about, like mm-hmm. I said, about a year and a half ago, because my traditional GP, who I love very much, but I had wrist problems. Like all of a sudden my wrists just started to ache. And I'm a very active person. I've been in karate since I was 6 years old. And his answer to me was, well, you've been doing, you know, karate for years and years and years. And it's like chronic overuse and abuse. And you're just going to have to deal with this. And I was like, I don't want to deal with this. And then it was a friend of mine that said, you know, try acupuncture. And I went to see her right away, this girl that I was recommended to go see. And she's still my acupuncturist now. And she's a rock star. And she actually told me, she's like, we're going to get this. And it was just so wonderful, the compassion that she showed to me. And then she did get it. Like, it took a little bit longer because I guess I'd been dealing with the situation for probably about 7 or 8 months at that point. And so it took more. She had expected sort of about 4 sessions for it to be dealt with. It took about 10 or 11. But I'm great today. Like, I would say that one wrist is completely healed and the other one is at about 98%.
And that's also kind of within the normal range of expectation. I mean, when we look at a repetitive stress syndrome, it depends on how badly damaged the tendons and the ligaments are and overstretched. And so that'll also dictate how long the treatment is gonna last for. But ultimately, you know, and you're a great testament of that. You've seen results and you're feeling much better.
What do you say to people who are afraid of it? Because again, like, a lot of people just freak out over the needle thing. But I think a lot of people, apart from the needles, like, they just, it's like they won't accept. Like, I was open to the experience. And I feel like some people are like, this is like, you know, mumbo jumbo. It's not going to work. Like, what kind of mindset do you need people to be in, Dr. Lamadrid?
Well, so that's an interesting comment. And I come across that all the time. I get the naysayers. I get not only people that are afraid of the needles, because that we can kind of get through. But if you're very kind of adamant, and you don't even have to believe in acupuncture for it to work. So let me share with you a story that was just released in the news yesterday. There's a tiger in Israel that has a chronic ear infection and for the past year and has not responded to any of kind of the standard care, standard antibiotics or anything like that. They're now giving the tiger acupuncture.
Wow.
Which is a big thing. And now that tiger will respond very quickly because the tiger doesn't have any belief system, positive or negative, regarding the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And so animals are a great resource that kind of show us that this medicine works whether you believe in it or not.
That's amazing. Now, can you talk to us a little bit about, like, cupping? Because I know that that's something that is used, like, they've used that on me. Can you explain what cupping is, Dr. Lamadrid?
So cupping is great. I actually did a segment on television just recently, and a lot of celebrities have kind of embraced it as the new trendy treatment. The thing is that it's been around for thousands of years, first off, and it's not entirely an Asian modality. It was being done in Egypt. It went into Greece, went into China. And so I have a lot of patients from Russia, from Poland that tell me, oh, yeah, my grandmother used to put cups on my back when I had a cold. And that's one of the reasons why we would use cupping. It actually stimulates the immune system. So if you, let's say every fall you catch a cold, mm-hmm. you start getting cupping in August and September, you will not catch a cold for the rest of the season. And they've actually proven this with blood tests. They've actually shown that as soon as the cups are administered, white blood cells start getting produced very quickly and the immune system is boosted.
And how many sessions would you have to do that, Dr. Lominger? Let's just say for that example, like you start in August, do you do like a few or how many?
Well, so if you're in relatively good health, usually one or two treatments is all it takes to boost your immune system. Now, if you're chronically sick, then you may need a couple more and spaced out a little bit more. So maybe once a month to kind of maintain your level of immunity.
That's fantastic. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is acupuncturist Dr. Ed LaMadrid. For more information, make sure to check him out on his website, www.edlamadrid.com. Can you explain, we talked a little bit about some of the things that you can help with. I wanted to go back to neck and head pain because I think a lot of people, and probably lower back pain as well, that seems to be what a lot of people suffer from. Again, is it the same principle where you're you know using the needles to draw attention to those areas and that's what's getting you through? Because I know my acupuncturist, for example, had mentioned to me that she often gets referred by doctors to treat migraine sufferers.
Mm-hmm. And that's usually, I mean, just to kind of backtrack on something that you had said before, a lot of our patients come in as kind of a last resort. They've done the entire contemporary medicine, you know, scope. They've done the medication. And maybe they're one step away from surgery, and they want to try one more thing. And if they have a progressive physician, they'll recommend trying acupuncture.
Have you had difficulties, Dr. LaMadrid, with traditional, you know, GPs, like general doctors? Because I know, like, I've been around enough of them where, like you said, some of them are progressive and are open to it, and then others are like, it's mumbo jumbo.
Well, yes. Depending on where. If you're walking around in California, you will probably, you walk two blocks and you'll probably bump into two or three acupuncturists. They're just all over the place. And on the West Coast, there's a lot more acceptance. Acupuncture is actually in the hospitals in California, which is great. In New York, it's starting to get there on the East Coast. And in the Midwest, definitely some challenges with some of the more conservative physicians. And so, yes, I come across that. And one of the ways that I deal with that is I show them the research. You know, and the research doesn't lie at that point. And this is clinical, randomized, you know, it's research that's done to the highest standards of scientific research. And then they can't say anything at that point. And so many times they'll refer their patients with kind of the comment like, I don't know how it works, but research says it works, so go ahead and try it. And so my patients come.
Can you explain as well, Dr. LaMadrid, I'd heard about the change of season treatments. Can you explain what that is?
So let me go back to something that I said earlier. We talk about the five element theory in Chinese medicine. And so within that theory, there are five seasons. And for each season is kind of tied into a specific organ. And when that season comes along, the body is going to be more susceptible if that organ is not strong enough to those diseases. So the fall is one of the primary ones. And the fall correlates with the element of metal, which correlates with the organs of the lungs. So one of the most common conditions we see in the fall are bronchitis affecting the lungs. So let me share with you an historical story about acupuncture physicians. Back then, they used to travel from village to village as preventative medicine. So they would go into a village in anticipation for the season, and they would treat everybody in the village to basically boost their immune system for the coming seasonal diseases. And basically, if anyone got sick, they'd probably be hearing from the emperor at that point. They'd get into trouble. So Chinese medicine really developed the thought of preventative medicine, not just screening, which is what we have now, but actually doing a treatment to prevent a future condition from happening.
That is just awesome. Dr. LaMadrid, what would you like to leave my listeners with as a sort of a parting thought about acupuncture?
Well, one of my missions really is to inform people and to give people choices in their medical health care. You know, contemporary medicine has a lot to offer, but I think in partnership with Asian medicine, you've got an amazing combination for people. And the other thing that I would add is that acupuncture is so good with many of our chronic problems that Western medicine just can't deal with, things like headaches, things that may not be life-threatening but are annoying, and annoying to the point where we're now taking daily medication just to kind of control it when, you know, a couple of sessions of acupuncture could take care of it permanently. So things like the aches and pains that we deal with, things with stiffness, things with low energy, bad sleep, chronic headaches, these are things that could be addressed very quickly and effectively with acupuncture and Chinese medicine.
Dr. Ed Lamadrid, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly. Glad to be on the show.
That was acupuncturist again, Dr. Ed Lamadrid. Make sure to check him out on his website for more tips and information. Very simple, edlamadrid.com.
Stand by.
The Love Zone
with Gina Lee
on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Welcome to The Love Zone. I'm Gina Lee. Have you ever noticed that you consistently date the same type of personality or end up in the same kinds of relationships? No matter how much you swear you won't end up in a similar situation, you find yourself doing just that? Or do you find that the course of your relationships always seem to take a particular path, almost without you being aware of it, until it's too late? All that, my friend, is called a pattern. As human beings, we are creatures of habit, and with habits come patterns. But what creates the habit? I'd say it's our past experiences and how we've internalized them. Let's look at some simple examples. Say you touched a pot that was too hot and you got burned. So now you have a habit of wearing oven mitts before handling anything on the stove. Or when you missed out on an important opportunity because you were late, you later developed the habit of always being early. Makes sense, right? Now, when it comes to the habits we express in relationships, it's not as sensible, at least at first glance. For instance, we may often get into the habit of doing jealous, controlling things in a relationship, like always keeping tabs on every step your partner takes, because in the past, you've experienced betrayal. Then you develop a pattern of mistrust and doubt, and it becomes the only way you can operate in a relationship. What's even more dangerous is when we start choosing partners who have already exhibited untrustworthy behavior, because subconsciously, we're programmed to deal with that type of drama, so you go with what you know while still crying about the fact that you keep doing so. Habits are choices we make repeatedly, and in repetition emerges a pattern. So, if you want to find out what your pattern is, where it stems from, and where it's leading you, it's time to put on your detective cap and go searching for those habits. Discover what it is that you consistently do when in a relationship, especially when you're emotionally triggered by something. Once you've found that habit, it's time to do the deeper digging and find out the past experience that it's connected to. Is it a fear of rejection or abandonment? A need for validation and approval? All of which boils down to a need for love, doesn't it? But as you no doubt know, we sometimes have warped ways of getting what we want. As you embark on your soul searching, here are a few keys that may unlock some doors along your journey. When I say look into past experiences, look really far back. I'm talking all the way to childhood. Because guess what? Any unresolved issues you've had with your parents or parental figures in your life will manifest themselves into your relationships. It's often said that since our first relationships were formed with family, we tend to seek similar relationships in our adult life and become drawn to certain personality types who will serve to reenact the issues that were never resolved. When we acknowledge the psychological impact that our past has had on our current relationships, we can better spot the habits that stem from it, allowing us to pick apart the pattern that leads us down the road to disaster. It really takes a conscious effort to transform habits that have become ingrained into who you are. But once you decide that they're no longer working for you, change is inevitable. You'll need to be dedicated and vigilant with yourself, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Seeing a therapist or talking to a close friend who can help you spot the problematic patterns will give good insight into how you got into them in the first place. Also, speaking to someone about those past painful experiences will help to finally deal with those issues in a way that doesn't have to negatively impact your relationships. We can't control what happened to us in our past relationships, but we can have power over how we move in the ones we have now and will have in the future. Unravel the pattern that is holding you trapped and make a new one. Think about it. If you've been unconsciously falling into the same type of dysfunctional relationship over and over, imagine the kind of relationships you will have now that you're consciously creating a pattern that will bring you the peace you desire and the love you deserve.
We'll be right back.
all have to make some tough decisions in our lives. More often than not, the comments that our friends or loved ones make can lead us to feel guilty or persuade us to change our decision. How can we overcome these obstacles and make the best possible choice without fear or regret? Author and life coach Janice Bastani joins us to tell us ways to empower yourself to make the best possible decisions in life. Janice, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here today.
So, Janice, what does it take to make a good decision in one's life, regardless of what the decision is actually about?
Well, for me, in all the years that I've been a professional coach, the thing that I saw over and over again with clients is, you know, we all want to make great decisions, and great decisions comes from knowing what you believe about the decision you're going to make. So one of the things that we know is that we all want to make great decisions. We all want to have great relationships. And so what I ask people is, what is your belief about making great decisions about relationships? Most people look at me with a huge blank stare. They don't have a belief around relationships, just as for instance. So when we start digging a little deeper around this, we ask them, you know, well, where did your belief about relationships come from? You know, if you think you're always in a bad relationship or you make bad choices about being in relationships, where did that come from? And when we start digging a little deeper, we find out that, you know, this comes from perhaps experience. Perhaps we find out that we learned this from childhood by watching our role models, and we just pick up on whatever's going on in our life. One of the things I've also noticed about making decisions is I call it living in the consensus of life. And today we tend to ping everybody around us about how we should make a decision. You know, we ask everybody on Facebook, what decision should we make? And we don't ask the very most important person, and that is ourselves. And I call this living by consensus. And that is not a healthy way to live our lives. It is certainly not a good way to make decisions.
What kinds of things in our environment around us are preventing us from seeing what's best for us? Because you just mentioned, like, you know, we basically the buck stops here. So where are we not seeing, or what are we not seeing?
Well, we're not seeing a lot of things. We are what I call living in an environment that is fragmented. We live in a place that is full of noise. We live in the drama of the moment. It's like an addiction almost. And we love this. We feed on other people's misery. I mean, all you have to do is look at how even the nightly news is just filled with the drama and misery that is going on all around us. And we feed on it like someone who's hooked on an illicit drug. And that's the way we are just feeding and wired. I mean, if you look at things that have been, there's a lot going on today on the whole science of how our brain works, and we are not wired to perform multiple tasks consistently because we aren't wired to do that. Our brains cannot do that well. We cannot text and drive a car. We cannot talk on a phone and drive the car. We cannot do emails and keep up alerts and everything else that goes on around us. We are not wired to do that. And we have all of this input coming in at us all the time, and we become fragmented in every area of our life.
How can we eliminate things around us that are clouding our thoughts and minds?
Well, one of the things we can do is we can shut off our alerts. That's a very simple thing. One of the things that I am a real stickler for is not bringing your technology into the bedroom at night. And that's simple, but it's absolutely crucial to getting a good night's rest. Our bodies need time to repair. We need that downtime, and our brains need time to process what has transpired through the day. We quite often, it's the last thing we do at night, is we check what's going on like we're going to miss something. You know that saying of FOMO, fear of missing out. What are you going to miss out on? The first thing you do, you wake up, you reach for the phone and look what you've missed out on. Put it away. Have limited time. So much of our lives is spent in wasted checking out if we've missed something. Have a specific time that you check your email. Maybe it's at 10 and 4 o'clock. Unless your job is totally dependent on your getting business out of the mail, then don't check it. Your productive time needs to come in 90-minute increments so that you can stay focused and actually be productive and get some productive time into your job.
Janice, what are your thoughts on exercise and making decisions? Because I always find that, like, exercise to me is really important because it clears everything out. And oftentimes I find the answer comes to me when I'm, like, hitting the pavement.
Sure. Well, why is that, do you think? Because you've got oxygen and blood flowing up into the brain, right? And you're also focused on movement. And that frees up your brain to be thinking on other things. And exercise is important. And having a regime, a process, something that you do as a routine is very important. Most people get up and they charge into what we call a daily habit. And we quite often don't give any thought to what the habit is. And we go to the base most, deep rut is what it is in your brain. We go to the thing that is the most common, the thing that is comfortable for us. If you have always had the habit of getting up, let's say, and you take a nice deep cleansing breath and you brush your teeth, drink a glass of water, you put on your running shoes or whatever it is you do, take yoga, take deep breathing, and maybe you charge out the door and you go for a run or whatever it is, that's your habit and your routine, and then you get dressed and you have your breakfast and you go off to work. Many people roll out of bed, have a cup of coffee, get dressed, charge off to work, and they don't even eat breakfast. So it's what is your habit, and what your habit is what your lifestyle is. If you're always short and you don't take the time to take care of your body and your mind and your spiritual life, you will have a very disjuncted, fragmented life, and you won't ever get anywhere.
Joining us on The Kelly Alexander Show is life coach and author Janice Bastani. For more information, make sure to check out her website, janicebastanicoaching.com. Janice, how does one make a decision without being clouded by feelings of maybe being judged by others? Because I think when you get into a certain point in adulthood, it gets less, but I think it also depends on your upbringing. So how do you not care what people think?
Well, I think that comes from what I believe is at the core of everything, and that is your self-worth. One of the reasons that I wrote this book that I wrote, Eve, Reclaim Your Power, is that in my coaching practice, I would talk to people and we would get, over whatever the challenge was that they came in to be coached on, and they would leave, and I would always feel like there was something just lying right under the surface, and I couldn't really put my finger on what it was. And one day, I just kind of like an epiphany happened to me and an aha. And that was, I just felt like there was this underlying question of what do they believe about, are they actually worth having whatever it was that the challenge was that they came into the coaching session about. And let me explain what I mean by that. Let's just say that you were in a transitional phase and you wanted to get a new job, for instance, and it was above where you currently were. But your underlying kind of question was, am I really worth that new job? And the answer is yes, you are, but you don't think that you're really worth that. And why am I not worth this new job? And that goes to the feelings of having like someone pour into your life, making like an internal deposit into you. And this comes from the people that surround you, and the support that you have around you, and someone every day telling you that that you have worth, and that what you do has value, and that you are appreciated. And a lot of us do not have those kinds of people in our lives. And we might have not have those people in our lives for many different reasons. And those reasons are because we are poor in relationships. We don't have a foundational structure in the home, whether that's with, a spouse or a significant other or a support in our community or in our professional lives. And this goes to the heart of why we don't feel worthy internally. And for me, what I see, and this is really important for me and what I see in my own coaching practice, is we don't have a home in that really just practical sense, we do not have a home to come home to have that being built into our lives. And home looks different for each and every one of us.
Janice, can you talk to us about your thoughts on decision-making with regards to business and home life? Because, for example, I remember working with this girl several years ago who was like, you know, like in a management position, and she was really great at sort of all of that. And then her and I sort of became friends. And then obviously sort of hanging out outside of work, I noticed that she was not so great in making decisions in her personal life. Like, she was sort of wishy-washy. Do you find that happens a lot, like where either people are really good at making decisions at work but not at home, and then vice versa?
Oh, sure. I mean, this is an interesting thing. I think we do not live in a vacuum. What happens a lot of times is, I sometimes just explain it like this. It's like a mathematical sentence. What happens in your professional life and what happens in your personal life actually come together quite often. When you have something that happens at home, let's just say you have a typical day where you have a single parent who has a child who, I don't know, forgets their lunch, right? And you have to get back in the car or turn around and go back home and get the lunch, or you have to give the child money for their lunch money. And the parent comes into the office. That negative energy follows right into the office, okay? It follows in. You try to put it down, and you stuff it down and down and down, and you'll say, I'm going to be professional, and that's not going to affect me in my professional life. The same thing is true on the opposite side. Something happens at work. Let's say a deal blows, or something happens at work where you get laid off, let's say, and you get in the car and you come home, and you do bring it right through the front door, and it does affect your home life. Now, what you just gave was an example of where someone is incongruent. That means that their inside and their outside do not match. In their professional life, that's their outside. They appear to have it all together, but when they get to the touchy-feely inside personal life, they seem to not have it together. That's someone who is incongruent. They're wearing a mask, and that takes a lot of energy to keep up a front. Does that make sense,
mm-hmm.
what I'm telling you?
Very
much so.
You've
probably seen this in somebody.
Yes.
You've probably seen this in people. And that is, wow, that'll make you old so fast, and you cannot keep that up very long. And the mask comes off, and then you will see who they really are.
Janice, you are amazing. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure to pour into your audience.
That was author and life coach Janice Bastani. Again, for more information, check out her website, janicebastanicoaching.com. A big thank you going out to my guests, Serena Ryder, Dr. Ed Lamadrid, Janice Bastani, and the always amazing Gina Lee. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from Michelangelo. The greatest risk to man is not that he aims too high and misses, but that he aims too low and hits. Don't forget to check out all of our social media on Twitter at K Alexander Show, also on Facebook, The Kelly Alexander Show, and our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. If you have any comments or questions, drop me a line, Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an awesome week. You and I'll chat soon.